You're listening to a podcast from Streams Church in the West Valley of Phoenix, Arizona. For more audio and visual content, visit streamschurch.org.
Oh, you look good on this dreary, cold day. It's cold to us. So we have been in a series talking about grace, and the slide tells us plus nothing. And so if you're wondering, what does that mean? Well, what we've been talking about is that that is the definition of grace. There's nothing you can add to it. It's just grace, and you just receive it. And I know that that's hard for us to wrap our brains around. It's hard for me to wrap my brain around, but that is what we're talking about. And we started a journey last week in Matthew 5, which is the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus it's the longest message we have in one spot from Jesus. So there's a big crowd, and he goes into the Beatitudes, and then he goes into some, you've heard it said, but I say. And that's kind of the focus we have the next few weeks. Last week, Pastor Lloyd started us with, you've heard it said, don't murder, but I say, don't hate. And he rocked the crowd because, like, who could do that, right? Who could qualify? And so today we're going to transition a little bit into the next portion, but want to set it up a little bit. And here's something that I've learned about grace for sure in my own life, and that is that it doesn't shy away from the hard things. Grace isn't this fluffy cover for the things that are bad. It's actually the opposite. Grace dives into those things. Grace attacks those things. It says, let me see what's hidden away. And so grace doesn't shy away from the hard things, and Jesus is grace. He is the definition of grace, and he did not shy away from the hard things. He talked about the hard things. He confronted the sin. And so we have to wrestle with that when we talk about grace, that it means looking at the real reality of who we are inside. And I've shared my story before, so a lot of you already know that I come from this abusive background. I was sexually abused by my own father, and it took years to heal from that. But I am healed by the grace of God and totally free of that, and there's no wounds left open because he's so good. And one thing I remember encountering in that process that I really wrestled with, and this still comes up sometimes, people will ask me when I share my story, and that is, how could a father do that to his own daughter? How could a father do that to his own child? And I wrestled with that question. That's part of the journey, was wrestling with how do I reconcile that? Jesus took me on a journey in that process and helped me trace some things back even before I was born and start to create this trail that did give me some perspective. Showed me that the moment my dad chose to hurt me was not the moment he chose to sin. That wasn't the first decision. But he'd made that decision 1,000 times in his heart. And that those thousands of decisions along the way is what led to that moment. And we're going to come back to that idea a little bit later. But that brings me to this truth, this reality. And that is that when we hear stories of each other, when we tell our own story, when we listen, we make judgments. It's just it's our human nature to make a judgment. We're judging our own story. We're judging our neighbor's story. We're judging the story on the internet. We're always making judgments, right? But here's something that occurred to me in preparing for this, is that if you go back to the garden and the original intention of creation, when God created Adam and Eve, he didn't create us to judge. So we're really bad at it. God didn't create us to judge. He created Adam and said, name everything. So he had that authority, and he said, have dominion. So we're really good at labeling things, and we're really good at being in control. But we're really bad judges. And so because of the knowledge of the fruit that they ate, you know, and it gave them this knowledge of good and evil, we are now thrust into this battle of constantly judging right from wrong, good and bad. And you're going to make thousands of judgments between now and the day that you die. But because we were never created to judge, because we're really bad at it, we often lose sight of truth, and we make the judgments of what is right and wrong based on what we want them to be, not necessarily on what is right and wrong. That is where we are at when we come into Matthew 5. That is the context, a bit of the context that we are at, is that Israel has taken the law and they have twisted and shaped and smashed it to fit what they thought it should be. And so they've been making judgments for years, generations, based on their interpretation of what is right and what is wrong. And Jesus, as Pastor Lloyd has already established last week, is the final authority on the law. No man has ever walked the planet that can say, I am here to interpret the law. But Jesus can do that. And so every time that Jesus says, you've heard it said, he is looking dead in the face of the teachers and saying, you have said this, but I've come to tell you this is what my Father meant by that. He's come to set it right. He's come to show us the real meaning, the heart of the law. So we're going to be in Matthew 5, and I want to give us some context because we are looking today at a pretty blunt, hard-to-take-in portion of Matthew 5. And it looks at first glance like Jesus is just like condemning and attacking men in this portion because he speaks specifically to men. But I want to give you some context for why he does that. So in this culture, in Israel's culture, at this point in time, women are oppressed by men. This is part of the breakdown from the day that Adam and Eve fall over the course of generations and our inability to make judgment well, that man has determined that woman is meant to be lorded over. And so women have no power, they have no voice. That's not God's design. That was never God's plan. That is man's poor judgment. And so women are oppressed in this society. So much so that women are required in this society to wear head coverings. They have to be covered, head coverings, head to toe, because they have been labeled, women are seducers. That's what they've called women in this culture. Women are seducers. And so you need to be covered because you might cause a man to stumble and lust if he sees you uncovered. That is not God's law. That is man's interpretation. That is man's poor judgment. And so that is the culture that Jesus is speaking in right now. That is the way that women are viewed. That's the way men are thinking. And so then we come to Matthew 5:27. And this is what it says. You've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It's better to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Now, here's what I love. That's intense. I get it. But here's what I love. Jesus, every time he gets an opportunity, he restores the identity of women. And that's what he's doing here. He is looking into a fracture between men and women, and he's saying, you cannot blame her for your choice. Now, he's not omitting, just because he doesn't mention that a woman can also commit adultery. He recognizes, and he is not saying that women are not capable of also committing adultery, of also thinking lustfully. But he is turning a cultural norm on its head, and he is saying, you cannot lay the blame of your actions at her feet, because your actions are the result of what is in your heart. And that is what I'm looking at. Case in point is the woman caught in adultery. We all, you know, most of us know that story. It's a famous biblical story from Jesus' ministry. The crowd drags the woman to the center, throws her down in front of Jesus. We caught her in adultery. The law says stone her. What do you say? I have a question. I've always had a question. Where's the man? Because it takes two to tango. I'm pretty sure it was the same then as it is now. But you don't see the man being put on trial. You only see the woman. Why? Because in this culture, well, she seduced him. So it's her fault. Do you see how twisted that judgment is? How oppressive that is? So when Jesus is here, now he's not saying, because remember, what does he say to the woman? Where are your accusers? She's like, God, there's none. He says, go and sin no more. So Jesus is not telling us, oh, you got it all wrong. It's all men's fault. He's saying you both are responsible for your own actions. And your actions are a result of what is in your heart. And you think that because you haven't done this thing, it makes you righteous. And I've come to tell you, your righteousness is nothing. That's hard to swallow. We always want to blame someone else for our mistakes, right? I mean, think about the garden. Like the first reaction when they show up, when God shows up. That woman you gave me, well, that snake in that tree, like that's the initial reaction of the sin, is to point fingers somewhere else. Our children don't have to be taught how to blame someone else for their actions, right? It's It's like a human nature. We like to blame someone else and make excuses. And I would say that when it comes to sexual sin, we do that really, really well. Well, she seduced me. Well, he kept saying these flowery, beautiful words to me, and I couldn't control myself. Well, God gave me these desires, so it's not my fault. We look for somewhere to cast the blame. And I understand this, friends, because I lived in legalism for a really long time. And legalism only breeds shame. And shame requires that I cast blame somewhere else. Shame requires that in order for me to be righteous, I have to find your lack. And then that makes me look good. That's a lie. It's a twisted religion, and it is not what God has for us. But I get it, because I lived there for a long time. And when there is shame involved, the last thing we want to do is come out of hiding. But when Jesus says, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery, but I say, if you look at a woman or a man lustfully, you have already done it in your heart. He is removing the excuse. He is removing the blame game. He's saying, your actions lay at your own feet. It is your heart I see, and it is your heart I'm seeking. And the standard is way higher than you think it is. It's no secret that we live in a society plagued with sexual sin and addiction. And Jesus has called me into the very field that brought me so much suffering, which is grace, that I can go into this place now and minister to women who are trafficked, and I can speak hope to them because I've experienced it for myself. That's redemption. And so I do go downtown, and I've shared this many times, so a lot of you probably already know this. And this month, February, our church, we're kind of trying to highlight every week some different missions that we're involved in. We want you to know what we do as a church. And so our church actually supports this ministry downtown. It's called the Fountain of Hope, and I go down there once a month, and we do breakfast for the girls on the street because Phoenix is in the top five of the nation for trafficking. And so there's a lot of that happening. And we also do a laundry day, which you've heard us talk about. And because the area where this trafficking happens is very impoverished, which means it's vulnerable. And so the cycle just keeps going. And so we want to go and we want to bring life and we want to bring hope and we want to bring God's prosperity to these people. And so that's why we do these things. But I knew before I started that work, I knew the destruction that sexual sin can create. I was the victim of it. But being in this work and doing the things I do downtown and meeting these women, I have come to see what massive scale sexual sin, how it breeds destruction on such a massive scale. I mentioned earlier that in healing from my abuse, I wrestle with that question, how could a father do this to his own daughter? Well, Jesus took me on a journey, and he showed me a time before I was even born, when my dad was only 5 years old, and he went with his father, who was a minister. My granddad was a pastor. And they went to a church member's house because back then the pastor would make little stops at all the church members' houses throughout the week. And he went to the bathroom and he found pornography in the church member's house. And he grew up in a culture, church culture, where you did not talk about the hidden things. You didn't talk about it. It was legalism. And so this 5-year-old boy was left to just work it out. And what 5-year-old, 8-year-old, 11-year-old can work out something like that on their own? And so the Lord showed me in that journey of grace and coming to see through different eyes how this was introduced to him as an innocent child, a child, and that he didn't know what to do with this knowledge and this what he'd found. And so he just kept growing in this addiction. And the addiction required more. Because pornography will always require more and more. You cannot satisfy it. And I guarantee, I am positive, that my father did not hold me in the hospital and look into my face and think, one day I'm going to hurt her. I know he didn't. But that is what these things do to us. These sins that we keep hidden in our heart, these sexual sins, these addictions, they take you to places you can't imagine going today. And it's not okay. And Jesus is calling us out in this passage of scripture, and he's saying, you think that just because you don't go there and do that, that you're good. And I'm here to tell you that I see what's in your heart. My dad was enslaved. His master was lust, and he did the bidding of his master, even to the point of things he would have never imagined doing. There are over 24 million pornographic websites on the web. Every second, over 24,000 people are viewing porn just in the U.S. It's a $2.4 billion a year industry. And the stats of men and women who are addicted is almost 50-50 now. It's not just a man problem. Our secret sin is not so secret. We're just not talking to each other about it. This is the only place in this scripture, in this Matthew chapter 5, where Jesus gives us a graphic illustration of how he wants us to deal with this sin. When we read this, we're like, whoa. He says, you've heard it said, but I say, even if you think this way, you've sinned. And then he says, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It's better to be without a limb than to be thrown into hell. Why does he mention the eye? Because the eye is the lamp of the soul. And so what you look at comes in here and you dwell on it. And what you dwell on takes root in your heart. And what takes root in your heart, your hand will act upon. So he's connecting dots for us. He's connecting the two things. And he's being so graphic because he wants us to understand the destruction that this will bring to us. He wants you to know, I see where this will take you, and it is not good. It is dark, and it will take you to a place you can't even imagine going right now. And he says, you need to be passionate and aggressive about getting it out of your life. Do whatever it takes. See, lust lies and says, your actions aren't hurting anyone else. You're doing this alone. No one else is being affected. But the reality is you're hurting far more people than you realize with these things. I've learned in my work these past years that what fuels sex trading, completely fuels it, is pornography. Pornography creates the demand. And so that is why every Saturday we bring girls in off the street who are being trafficked. This seems like a good time to talk about grace. Because we are seeing the weight of this sin, and we're seeing that Jesus is saying to us, I can see inside of you, and what I see is not okay. I want more for you. And I encountered grace about 9 years ago, and it literally changed my life. Literally changed my life. Until that moment, I thought life was a list of do's and don'ts. And I would have even read this and thought, see, it's too hard. Look at all the things that are required of us. And I would have just kept working to make myself worthy. But as I went on this journey of healing, and Jesus began to meet me in every shame-filled, anger-filled, broken memory. I mean, he showed up. He showed me in every memory where he was, that he had never turned his face away. When I began to see that, it began to teach me something. That Jesus died, he suffered, he died, and he resurrected to give me access to one thing, himself. He died and he resurrected to give me access to his presence. And I looked up the definition of grace because I always love to look up definitions because I'm a word person. And grace, interestingly, has a noun definition and a verb definition. And we all know, well, maybe you don't, but a verb is active for those of us who are into grammar. Verb means it's an action word. It's movement. And the action word, the active word grace is defined as honoring someone with your presence. We've all heard that before. He graced us with his presence. She graced us. If the queen came in, we'd say she graced us with her presence. I have learned that to receive the grace of God is to receive the honor of his presence. I have found that the grace of Jesus means I get to be the dwelling place. The veil is ripped and gone. There is no separation. He has given me back my freedom to choose. And I don't want anything in my heart to crowd out his presence, because it has only been in his presence that I have found peace. It has only been in his presence that my soul has been restored. It is only in his presence that I am free. It is for relationship that God graces us with his presence. This is grace. Galatians 2:19 says, "For through the law I died to the law so that I might live for God. I have been crucified with Christ and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not set aside the grace of God, for if righteousness could be gained through the law, Christ died for nothing." He's telling us it is grace that allows you access to my presence. It is grace that tells you, I know what you've done, but I've made a way so that I can come and dwell with you. See, Jesus finished the work of the law, finished forever. He said it on the cross, it is finished. Your striving, your working to make yourself good is done. Because now he's made a way for you and me to be the dwelling place of his presence. When he says, you've heard it said, but I say, he's setting a new conversation for us. He's actually taking us back to the garden. That's what he's doing. He came to restore things back to the original plan. When Adam and Eve were able to stroll in the cool of the evening, it says in Genesis, with their papa. Nothing hindered them. Nothing got in the way. Nothing made them not worthy to be in his presence. Jesus is telling us, I'm restoring you back to that place. That's the kind of access I want you to have. Anytime you need it, you can come. And for me, it's become this picture of that table that is set. Always ready. There's always a feast. And I am confident that at any moment I can boldly come to that table, plop myself down in a chair and talk to my king, and I know he's there. And I can tell him what I did wrong and he won't turn away, and I can tell him what's hurt and he'll listen, and then he'll speak life into me and hope. It happens in his presence. See, grace is a ministry of reconciliation. It is not a ministry of justice, because we do not deserve Jesus. You cannot earn it. There is nothing you will ever do to make you worthy on your own. Grace says, I've come to make a way. I want to reconcile your heart to my heart. That's all I've ever wanted, was for us to be one together, to dwell together. That's what he wants. Grace has taught me these things. It has taught me that there is more of him to pursue, that I can go deep and still go deeper and still go deeper and keep going deeper, and I will never run out of revelation and treasures to hunt. Because this is the King of Kings that I get to host in my life. In fact, I'm so certain of grace and what it can do that when I talk about the work I do downtown, and we talk about we want to rescue these girls, and that is something that God's called me to do, but I am so confident of grace that I can look into the face of her trafficker and I could say without hesitation, there is more for you too. Grace isn't just for her, it is for you. And we want to qualify it. We really, really want in our human nature to make a judgment on grace and go, well, I mean, you need to still kind of be. It is for every person who walks the planet. No matter your story, no matter your sin, it is for you. Sexual sin comes with such overwhelming shame. So we keep it hidden. It is the trap of the enemy. And that's how he keeps us in bondage to these things, because we keep it hidden because we're so ashamed. And Jesus has called me into this very battle against this darkness. And he's called me to defy shame and to speak to it and tell it to go. Because shame has no place in the presence of the King. And so I've come with good news for you. If you're listening today and you're going, wow, yep, that's me. I have this. She's like, she's reading my mail. Well, no, Jesus is reading your mail. And he's come today to tell you, you don't have to keep it hidden. I'm not shocked by your sin. I'm not so surprised to hear that you've been doing that in secret. I see it all, and I'm calling you to myself. He says, from a blood-stained cross, you can come as you are. But the resurrection says, I will make you new. Come exactly as you are, and I will make you new. What freedom that can give us. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. And as I was preparing to finish this message, I was like, well, how do we close this one out, Lord? Like I'm pretty sure I can't do come down to the front if you have this issue. I'm like, I don't think that's going to go over very well. I don't want to put you on the spot. But I'm like, I know we have to, like, close this out with some kind of an action step. And I first want to tell you that as I was preparing for the end of this, something occurred to me. You know, shame is a voice. It's a loud, violent, oppressive voice. And I knew it well for many years. But it occurred to me that grace is literally speaking the opposite of that voice of shame. Literally, it is the antonym. When shame says, don't tell anyone your secret or you will be rejected, grace is saying, I already know your secret and I want you anyway. Where shame says you cannot be made clean after what you've seen and what you have done, grace says, give me your dirty, stained cloak and I will give you my white, spotless one. Where shame is telling you there is no hope for you to overcome this, grace is saying, I am your hope. Grace is speaking to you today the exact opposite of the lie of shame. And so my prayer for you today is that shame is going to break off. It's a chain around your heart. And that the spirit of lust that is lying to you, if you are struggling with that, that you're going to be bold and you're going to reach out today to someone. You're going to say, I need help, because you can't fight this fight alone. You're not meant to fight any fight alone. We're not meant to be isolated in any of the things that we struggle with. You are meant to be accountable to each other. I'm going to invite you to stand. And here's what I would love us to do to close out. And then we're going to sing this song like we mean it. I want you to put your hand over your heart, because this whole thing is Jesus telling us, I want your heart. I don't want your empty actions. I want your heart. I died to take back your heart. And so I'm going to pray over you as your hand is on your heart. And if you are here today and you're struggling, I'm believing that as we pray, you're going to hear the chain fall off of your heart. This chain's going to fall off. And then you're going to have the courage, because Jesus gives us courage, to seek out help, to be free. Because Jesus died and resurrected to make you new. You don't have to be enslaved anymore. So, Father, I thank you for your freedom. It is for freedom that you have set us free, Jesus. You've come and you've died and you've resurrected because you want our hearts. Not our empty actions, not the outside things we do. You want the inside, a place where you can dwell. You are roaming today in this place among us, and you're saying, where can I dwell? Who has a heart that I can make a home in? And so I ask that you would break a chain right now off of any heart of shame or lust or any secret sin, that they would fall off right now in the name, the mighty name of Jesus. And that we would be free of the bondage of this world. No longer slaves to sin and death, but free to host your presence, to be your dwelling place. Make us free, Jesus. Make us pure. Make us yours.
This has been a podcast from Streams Church in the West Valley of Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit streamschurch.org.